Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello everyone. This is Diana Catherine Klopa. I am the associate publisher with Grey Wolf Publishing. And today we have a very fun and exciting conversation with author Matt McGee. Hi, Matt. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi. Can you hear us all right?
Yeah, I can hear you perfect.
Fantastic. I love technology. So today we're going to be chatting with Matt, and he's going to talk about his book, How I Learned to Love Joyce Carol Oates. This is story-based poetry. So Matt, can you tell us a little bit about how you interpret story-based poetry?
To me, story-based poetry is, it's the opposite of what you'll find in The New Yorker, or at least what I have found in The New Yorker. To me, The New Yorker is the primary style, if you want to call it, of the poetry that I find in these kinds of mass markets. I call them word piles. You know, it'll say stick, wall, cup, frozen. And I'm like, that's not a poem. It's just a stack of descriptive, descriptive language is not enough. What I want, just I think like everybody else, is I want something that describes to me a time, a place, an event, or a person. And give me a little bit more. It doesn't necessarily have to be Tennyson. It doesn't have to be, you know, poetry. It should, I would like it to deliver more of a story.
So would you say that story poetry for you would fit in with something like Edgar Allan Poe's work?
Probably, yeah. And if, okay. When people think of Edgar Allan Poe, they think of darkness. You know, they think
yes.
of something
but
darker.
I'm thinking of storytelling. Like when you think of The Raven, there's a story wrapped up in that.
Yep.
So is
a
that kind of what you're getting at? Yeah. Is that kind of the direction you want to go with your work?
I would like to think so, that it goes more in that direction. And I've been told that the reason that this, you know, is the thing that I embrace is because I'm out here in Los Angeles. And as far as formal structure goes, you know, I went back, I did a reading out on the East Coast recently, and there were two or three of us on the bill. And I was the first one up, and I told everybody, you know, the style that I tend to write at is a little bit looser, you know, it's a little bit more broad, and I would like to just kind of have some elbow room in here, you know, to use an adjective once in a while, you know, and to,
right.
you know, almost form a sentence, you know, and so I shot them out some work. In fact, it was a reading for the Joyce Carol Oates book, and everybody just kind of went, and then they did the sarcastic clapping thing. And I was like, oh man, I just came all the way across country to totally bomb with everybody.
Well,
and then a guy got up who had, the next guy had like perfect Harvard Ivy League clarity and format and style. And I'm like, okay, you know, I brought the wrong game.
Well, you know, sometimes it's important to expose even the most educated among us to something new and vibrant and exciting. And that's, you know, you've submitted work to our anthologies, and that's what I like about your writing style, is that it has a kind of different bent to it. It's not always what we expect. And for us here at Grey Wolf Publishing, that's something that we want to bring to readers, is something new and different and vibrant. So we really appreciate your style in that way.
Thanks. I appreciate hearing that.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you have the book handy? Can you do a little bit of a reading for us?
I do. I've got it on the computer in front of me. Most of the copies that I printed out, a real quick note about the Joyce Carol Oates book is that I was going to the East Coast for a couple of readings, and I was like, I'm going to throw a book together just, you know, cause I can, cause you know, Kinko's makes those things possible. They make those things possible now.
Sure,
so
sure.
I was like, I'm just going to put together a book real quick. And so because printing is so easy to do now, you know, as opposed to, say, 50 or 60 years ago, we can print out almost anything at any time of the day.
Exactly, yeah.
And So I threw together a book called How I Learned to Love Joyce Carol Oates. And it was a gathering of poetry or a gathering of poetry, story-based poetry and very short flash fiction that I thought were more descriptive, you know. So that's what I brought. It was very much like a one-off kind of thing. And it came out like in a matter of 72 hours. You know, it was
Wow.
real fast. It was really fast. But as a quick side note, that's kind of the way that it works with your magazine, is that I'll see you have a contest or you have a certain themed anthology, and to me that's a writing prompt, and bam, I
Yes.
just take off, you know, and collect the thing that makes sense right now in the moment, right now in the moment that I'm living in, whatever it is that's going on around me. Whatever's going on around me, or whatever particular, let's call it, it's almost like a tunnel that you're passing through, and you're seeing just certain things and feeling certain moods. And for the 72 hours that this book came about, I was in this tunnel, and it's brought out certain work.
That's fantastic. I absolutely love the instant impetus that happens when you get an idea like that. That happens for me quite frequently as well. You know, somebody will throw an idea at me and instantly I am scrambling with my keyboard and saying, "Shh, don't talk to me. I have to get this." So I definitely appreciate that methodology. If you could read a little bit for us, I want to make sure that we get that in so that your fans or people who are new to you can kind of get a flavor for your writing, and then we'll chat a little bit more. How does that sound?
Sure. This first piece that in opening the book, randomly came across. You and I were just talking a moment ago about Chris Cornell and
Sure.
the grunge era and that particular era. And I was you know, it's my thought that I thought Chris Cornell was going to outlive all of us. You know, I thought in 30 years he's going to be the 80-year-old dude up on the stage, you know, with whatever new band is still around or has just come around, and he's going to have the pipes, and he's going to represent our generation, and we'll all sit there with our walkers and go, "That's Chris Cornell. He was awesome back in the day. I saw him back in the day." You know, and we'd be proud, you know, we'd be proud that he was there. And so it's a real serious bummer that another artist from that era, from our grunge generation, that the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, is gone. But I've had this debate with people ongoing over the years that art takes on a lot of different forms. And this first piece is about let's just call it a piece of art that's been up for interpretation for a matter of years. And that
Okay.
particular piece of art isn't a painting, and it's not a magazine, it's not a book, but it is Sir Mix-a-Lot's Baby Got Back.
All right.
Sir Mix-a-Lot's Baby Got Back, almost I would argue with everyone that Sir Mix-a-Lot's Baby Got Back actually, in a way, qualifies for great art because so many people have interpretations of it and bring so many different things to it. And it's lasted so long that
Sure.
what was like a silly, ridiculous little song has you know, to this day, if you start hearing those opening notes of that song, people start kind of shaking their shoulders and they're going along, do. And to this day, it's still relevant. There's something about the song that's still relevant to this day. And so I wrote this piece about, if you remember the music video, there's this one particular white guy who pulls at his collar, like, "Wow." You know, he's got this look on his face where his jaw kind of goes off to one side, like, "Wow, I can't handle this." And this piece is about him. And it's called This White Boy's Got a Shout.
Okay, go.
It's true. I do like big butts and I cannot lie. But the day we shot my 3 seconds of the video, there were no gyrating models or overpaid big booty hood rats grinding in front of me for inspiration. No, just me in a suit in front of a green screen, a director who hadn't shaved or showered after an all-night coke and hooker binge. The lighting guy, a couple grips, a cameraman, and the makeup lady. And let me tell you, she did not have back. They didn't even play the song when I pulled on my collar and stretched my jaw in a pose as animated as the quaking booties you remember from the video. I'm not sure why they cast me. Maybe I look like the kind of white guy who'd get overheated when a baby who's got back jiggles by. Or maybe they saw me checking out the receptionist in their Century City casting office, saw my preferences and said, yep, that's our guy.
That's wonderful. I love the imagery in it, and I love the humor in it. It's so relatable. It's fabulous. Good job.
And so is Sir Mix-a-Lot, still to this day.
Yeah. But I love the word choice as well. You really make it accessible. So often poetry is like this thing we have to reach for, and you make it right there in front of us, so we don't have to stretch too far to get it. And so I appreciate that about your style of writing. Thank
there
you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure. What was it about 10 or 11 years ago, I did this show at a place in New York. I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of it. But in the middle of the night, it was like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and there was this guy who was there at the reading, just shammered off his rocker. And when he finally got up, he was just catcalling everybody, yelling at everybody on stage. We're like, who is this guy, man? Where's security? Because one of us is going to throw him out. A bunch of polite poets are starting to get upset by this dude sitting in the front.
Right.
And he finally, this grizzled guy with his torn up jacket and his shredded jeans and his shredded hair that looks like he used to be like a bassist for Wasp in 1986 or something like that. He gets up onto the stage and he leans into the microphone and he says, poetry is dead and we the poets killed it. And then he goes on to recite about what it is about poetry, what's wrong with poetry today. And he keeps going back to that one refrain, poetry is dead and we the poets killed it. And I don't think it's just the poets that have given poetry a bad name at the moment. I think that it's the publishers that publish stuff that is stick, cup, wall, frozen. Give me more of a story. That's why language exists. Language exists
exactly,
so that we can
sure.
communicate. We're supposed to communicate the human experience. And cup, wall, frozen, stick could mean a lot of stuff. That could
right.
be a lot of stuff.
Well, you know,
could
yeah,
be...
in my early 20s, I tried to write a book of poetry and I failed miserably at it because somebody told me those were the rules. And it was
mm-hmm.
so frustrating. So that's why I eventually moved into fiction, was because it was not nearly as constricting.
Mm-hmm.
I could tell more of a story. Do you have one more you can read for us?
Sure. And real quick, that sounds like a piece of bad writerly advice that we've talked about. What bad advice have you had over the years? That sounds like a piece of bad advice. As you'll probably see from the book and from other works of mine, for some reason I tend to write a lot about famous people, or just fame in general. I think that part of that is because of where I live. I live out here in an area of Southern California that's not LA. It's a suburb outside of LA, and it's a nice place where if you want to raise a family, this is a place to be, because you can still get to LA in 35 minutes if you have a helicopter. You can fly over the freeway. You can get there in 35 minutes. If you have a hovercraft or something like that.
Sure.
But nonetheless, you're just outside of LA, and this is where, this is where the action is. And so many, it's not uncommon to see someone who's famous walk next to you in the grocery store and be like, oh, hey, there's what's his face, And
right,
sometimes
right.
that's exactly what happens. You see what's his face. And you're like, oh, God, no,
hey,
I can't see
him
because I can't remember his name. I know you. You were in that movie that it was the one with the bee. oh man, but so you know, they're just your neighbors. You know, where I live, they're just my neighbors. But anyways, it tends to creep into the work, you know, because going to the grocery store, I'm just expecting to just go buy whatever it is I'm going to get on my way to the library.
Right.
And there's, you know, so-and-so passed me by in the sport drink aisle. So this particular piece is about how it is that there are a lot of trappings of fame that you just don't think about, you don't expect. And this particular piece is called "When You're Joe Montana, You Can't Pick Your Nose."
Okay, go ahead.
When you're Joe Montana, you can't pick your nose, because you never know when a cameraman whose cord you accidentally stepped on and disconnected after the 89 Super Bowl is still on the job today and will find you in row 16, seat of this year's World Series, waiting, hoping you'll slip a thumb the wrong direction, even for a moment to be tweeted, retweeted, and avenged.
I have known a few semi-precious famous people in the world, and I could say that they would highly agree with that piece.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you bring such a great imagery to it. We all could commiserate with that feeling that somebody famous might encounter in a situation like that. So, again, I really appreciate you making the work accessible. That's why we have included your work in our anthologies, is because you write so beautifully and so wonderfully accessible that we're creating people who are growing to love your work. So I really, really wanted to acknowledge you for that.
Thank you. And I would like to think that part of that is due to my city, you know, that the city that I live in. There is so much going on where I live that, like I said, you can't walk out your door and not be somehow involved in it. Sometimes you don't even have to walk out your door. But there's so much going on. It's such an active place, such an active community that it feeds, you know, it grooms your brain and it ends up coming back. And, you know, it's kind of like
a lot of wonderful fodder to work with too. You know, there's a lot to work with in that environment.
So
tell me about the book. I jumped on Amazon and I looked at your Amazon author page, which is wonderfully impressive, but I didn't see this particular book there. Is there a way that new readers, new fans can get a hold of this book? Will it be released on Amazon soon?
Yeah, I'm surprised it's not there already. I'll go and check on that today, actually, as soon as we're done here.
Yeah, I'm looking at the page right now, in fact,
and it's
not there. So probably
I'm gonna have to fire my agent.
In the technical world. So when you get that link, if you could forward it to us, we will add it to the archive so that anyone who listens to the archive of this broadcast can find the book.
Sure. Or, you know, just mail me a check.
Well, that's tough to do when we don't know pricing.
Oh, whatever. It's like Radio's head, Radiohead's in rainbows. You know, just make up whatever you want to pay for it.
Yeah, yeah. It's the Bon Jovi model. Whatever you want to pay for it, it's fine. Just
Bon Jovi has a model.
He has a restaurant in New Jersey which supports low income and homeless people, and it works off of, there are no prices on his menus. He says pay what you can afford or volunteer in the kitchen, wash dishes, whatever, and you get a free meal, which I think is a wonderful idea.
That's pretty cool.
So I don't see why authors can't offer the same service.
Because we are actually one of the hobos in line for
we're
one of the people that's in line for the meal.
Right. You be appearing anywhere across the country in the near or close future where we can go and hear you read?
Likely in July.
Do you have an event you want to plug?
That I want to plug? Not at the moment. I am available for birthday parties and weddings and graduations. I will probably be appearing somewhere in July that is kind of up in the airish right now, but more than likely it's going to be in the New York area. I'll be heading out there on the 7th of July and got an event in upstate New York, or I should say Northeast Pennsylvania in Scranton. If anybody knows Scranton and you're listening, hi Scranton.
Scranton's a great place.
Have you been there?
I have been there. And I remember that Harry Chapin wrote a great song called 50,000 Pounds of Bananas that took place in Scranton, mm-hmm. Pennsylvania. So,
is that why everybody sang that song when I was growing up?
Yes, that's exactly why.
people sang that song to me when I was growing up.
Yeah. And it's just simply fun. So, you know, people sang it. And it had three endings, so it was terrific fun that way. Do you have any books in the works coming up? Anything new that we should be on the watch for?
Well, I've got a couple things that are going on right now. Two of them are Grey Wolf related, actually. That there's the anthology coming out with the monthly contest winners.
Right.
That,
yes.
One of them, this is kind of what I touched on a moment ago about, you know, working with stuff that's in the moment. There's a story on there. There's a story that you are going to be putting in the anthology that happened when I was driving down the road. The genesis of it happened when I was driving down the road not far from my house. Then there was a small truck for sale. And I was driving home in the fog, and there was a small truck for sale off on my right-hand side, kind of popped out of the fog. And the way that memories pop out of the fog, you know, the fog of your brain or the fog of the past, and all of a sudden something comes out. And you're like, oh, my God, I wonder where that person's been for 25 years or 30 years or whatever it's been. And this small truck popped out of the fog, parked on the side of the road, and it was just like the one that a girlfriend had a long, long time ago. And I haven't spoken to her since, you know, when we broke up. And I've often wondered where she was. And one night I was driving home, saw the truck, and was like, okay, now I really, really wonder what happened to her. And I sat down to write something that was related to it. And it was, I started to kind of, I want to say embody a lot of the details that happened 30 years ago. And for some reason, it wasn't just because, you know, it wasn't just because I was looking for them, I think. I think that those details of an era gone by will pop up when you're ready to see them. And not just, you know, the truck parked on the side of the road, but other smaller things. You'll walk into Taco Bell and a song comes on. You're like, oh my God, this was our song. You know, what are the chances
Or an aroma, you know. Every time I smell pipe tobacco, I think of an old boyfriend. absolutely. So that's how you kind of germinated that story that's going to show up in the Den anthology.
Yeah, that particular one, and it was a joy not just, you know, writing it out and kind of reliving that the experience of back then and exercising some of the demons of the era, but to embody and to live in that for a while. And there's a second one that's going to be in the anthology as well. And it was just a joy rewriting those two particular pieces, you know, real quickly. And I'm really looking forward to the anthology when it comes out monthly thing.
Yeah, we're really, really excited about it. It should be out the beginning of August. It's called the Den Anthology. And as you mentioned, it is a collection of all of the monthly contest winners and honorable mentions from 2013 to 2016.
Uh-huh.
And this is an anthology that we're going to produce about every two or three years. So we're really excited about it. There's some great writing in there. You know, it's hard to do a contest because you can only choose one winner. So mm-hmm. we wanted to find a fun and exciting way to showcase all the really spectacular writers out there, and we came up with this idea.
So those of you who haven't seen a Grey Wolf anthology yet, first of all, what's wrong with you? And second of all,
thank you.
It's like it's the sample platter of short fiction writing. You don't just get one particular style; you get 14 different styles, or however many people show up in the book. So that's going on, and I'm excited about that. And then the other thing that I don't know if other people do this, you know, if other people do what it is that I'm going to describe, but there's something that got that landed the other day that I haven't pretty much for the most part told anyone about, even my best friends. And that's that last year I wrote a one act play, and it was about melancholy and how it is that melancholy is not, you know, goth, sad, you know, just hanging around, you know, it's people that are melancholy. Most of the people I know that are melancholy, including myself, it's more like a shade of lens that you just see everything through, and you're not sad. It's just that you feel things a certain way. And
sure. Yeah.
So I wrote about that, and I wrote two different characters that essentially have, each has a monologue of male and female, and each has a monologue about how it is that they see the world on a daily basis, and how in a way they almost kind of crave not just drama, but like extreme. And they want to witness the extreme. They want to witness these things. And so because it reminds them of what they feel, and it reminds them to feel. And so I wrote this one act play, and I had originally slated to put it into the Hollywood Fringe Festival, but that got scuttled for family reasons. And then about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I found out the play was picked up by a local theater to be part of a one act festival.
That's fabulous.
Thank you very
Good
much.
For you.
And it's not just that it's fabulous. It wasn't just like fabulous, like, oh, wow, cool. Now I get to go do 6 weeks of work, and I got a cast, and I've got to put together props. And, you know, it wasn't just like, wow. It turns out that being part of the one-act festival, this particular one-act festival, there's a director who's in charge of the whole thing. And I forget how many plays are on the slate. I want to say 7. But sorry, everybody at Santa Paula, if you're listening. The Santa Paula Theater, starting July 2nd, June 2nd, June 2nd out here at the Santa Paula Theater, which is just kind of outside of Los Angeles by about, I think, 30 miles or something like that. They're having a one-act play festival, and my play is going to be in this slate, and I haven't had to do anything. It's awesome. I haven't had to go
and
put together props.
You just get to stand in the back and worry about whether or not it's going to be well received. And that's enough work for all of us.
Or interpreted correctly, you know, by the actors.
Exactly.
I had a couple actors that I really, really wanted to be in this play. And that's actually one of the reasons I got scuttled from the Hollywood Festival, was because I couldn't get the two actors I wanted. And I was like, you know what, if I can't have these two people, I kind of don't want to do the show, because it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work
sure.
to put together a show, especially a show that's 40 miles from your home, and to travel
right.
down there
yeah.
on a regular basis. So
yeah, I did theater for several years, so I definitely understand the pain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the other exciting news aside from the along with the anthology is that this one act play, which is called Melancholy Is My BFF. Melancholy Is My BFF is
right.
going to be produced at the Santa Paula Theater on starting June 2nd. And I'm
Excellent.
Looking forward to seeing what a director does with it, because I've never had a piece that I wrote interpreted by other people and performed on a stage. So
yeah,
that's going to be
a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're about ready to wrap up our show here. I'm sorry, we're running out of time. I feel like we could talk for 2 hours, Matt. We will definitely invite you back for another show in the future. Maybe after your play debuts, we can talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
going to get a scarf and a beret.
You should. In the meantime, Matt can be found on his Amazon page, Matt McGee, on Amazon. And he also has a Facebook page. You can connect with him there as well. Matt, thanks again for coming in and spending some time with us. We really appreciate it.